Okay, this is the second side of the first cassette for session 9, July 18, 2006. Now, I wanted to add that the idea that we are the ecology. As we move into more advanced nanotechnologies or whatever amazing things are coming down the road where we humans will be able to alter matter pretty dramatically, then we're moving into the level of being a co-creator with original nature, whoever created first nature. And LaRouche is his thinking here of what humans inject into the biosphere is what we should call the ecology, is preparing, his thinking is preparing for that co-god situation. And so it's relevant in that way. And once we get there, then you would look back and say, well, when did this process begin? Happened way back there. We were, even though we didn't seem to be altering the ecology, since we were eventually going to be doing it and pretty dramatically, then the process started earlier. So I just wanted to add that he is saying and preparing for what will happen once we move into very advanced, you know, genetic engineering, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm going to read the quote again with that in. This is LaRouche's view of ecology. He's not looking at the effects on people, but he stays limited or focused on how much people are eating, how much they're able to think clearly and contribute to making more and more culturally advanced society, whereas McLuhan just looks at the effects on an almost aesthetic level. An aesthetic level, the effects of technologies, he's not thinking in terms of specifically economic advancement or basic overcoming hardware, famine, food problems. So, but LaRouche is looking at the effects. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We could say on the level of efficient causality, whereas McLuhan looks at formal causality, to use Aristotle's four causes, two terms from his four-cause scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So the... this is LaRouche.
Do you make an association between the word efficient and LaRouche's word negentropic?
Yes, he actually in later writings in that book, the Science of Reason, or this book he did late 80s, early 90s, and while he was in jail, he defined substance as efficient causality. He defined it that way. He emphasized the efficient causality and said that is substance.
Hmm.
And that is negentropy.
And how is he using the word substance?
Whatever the state of the biosphere is with our input at this point.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he wouldn't limit substance to a conventional category in science. He has an environmental, holistic view of substance.
Oh, okay, because when I think of the word substance within the context of science, I think of chemicals that make up
like adrenocorticotropic hormone.
Yeah.
That we had in the previous quote.
That's a substance.
Yes. Beg your pardon?
That's a substance.
Yeah. So LaRouche, again, being a... creative person with words is expanding the figure ground of what words normally mean or what the assumptions are associated with them, like McLuhan does. So here he is taking the word ecology, and this is what he says. You know, knowing that people are, Earth Day started a few years, four years before. This is written in 1974, and Earth Day started in 1970, April 22nd, 1970. The ecological movement of people trying to save their recycling and that. And LaRouche would say that's a silly form of ecological activity. You need to have more nuclear plants. You need to have more the very things everybody was afraid of. He would say we need more pure, properly advanced nuclear power plants. That's what he was saying would help the ecology. And his reasoning is the following. There's no intrinsic, quote-unquote, competition between man and the biosphere, of which he is a hegemonic part. Quite the contrary. The phenomena of quote-unquote ecological crises, which we witness today, are accounted for primarily by the dysfunctional primitive accumulation characteristic of capitalist development and are not intrinsic to the industrial expansion and technological development otherwise characteristic of the social reproductive process. See how he calls the growing of second nature a social reproductive process. And primitive accumulation, prim- Marxism, I think, for robber baron activity or mafias running societies and just fighting over the bare survival means, right? So,
so what's implied in this term, social reproductive process?
In other words, humans need more humans, smarter humans, who are able to make better technology so that we can support more humans, and that's how nature evolves.
Yeah.
So we're reproducing ourselves more efficiently.
Yeah.
And we only have an ecological crisis when we fall back into too much loan sharking, too much high interest rates, and the whole monetarist model that LaRouche is against, the whole idea of free trade and the Adam Smith model. That leads to dysfunctional ripping off of natural resources, raw materials around the world by an oligarchy. Mm. That's dysfunctional primitive accumulation. That is an ecological crisis.
Yeah. Now, is it true? Did Kissinger go after LaRouche at one point in time?
Yes. In the early 80s, he met with John Train, some Wall Street people, and they got Dennis King and Chip Berlay to write articles and started to attack more public media that would ignore any coverage of LaRouche, like Nash, New Republic magazine in 1984, and High Times did articles, and NBC. They started to do a whole bunch of articles and exposures of LaRouche's organization, and that was started by a Wall Street salon that Kissinger was part of.
Is that because they saw him as a threat to the capitalistic ideals?
Yeah, they saw him as a threat, in LaRouche's terms, against the dysfunctional primitive accumulation that they were doing so well under. And LaRouche was against that, and they saw that as a threat. I think the memo they eventually had, and you probably remember this, they had a memo when the FBI director Webster was with Kissinger at the Bohemian Grove in like the early 80s, and Kissinger mentioned LaRouche, and so then the thing started to happen around that event.
Now, how could that have been documented? The Bohemian Grove is a private, exclusive operation.
It was not an FBI memo. I think it's Webster was telling his underlings to go do something about it, and they published that. I've got that. They've got the copies of that memo. If it was a real memo, but it looked pretty real, they had copies of that in their newspapers.
Oh.
They repeated that memo a lot, especially once he got to court and was on his way to jail. So, continuing here. The development of society. Now, this is all this stuff about ecology is the content of an article called Rockefeller's Fascism with a Democratic Face. Okay, the development of society has brought us to the point during the past 10,000 years that human social reproductive processes have taken over the biosphere to the extent that the very existence of that biosphere depends essentially on its willful maintenance and development as a part of social reproductive processes. So he's saying that, like McLuhan would say, nature has become the content, and second nature is really running the show by the 20th century. And he continues, the notion that the ecology would prosper if man were to abandon it to freely resume some hypothetical wild natural, in quotes, wild natural state, is a simpleton's absurdity. Pull man out of the ecology and a disastrous ecological collapse would quickly ensue. Man has transformed the biosphere from a pre-human lower level of negentropic values to higher forms. In this process, the Earth has been transformed from a lower level of existence as a wild state, so he thinks those earlier levels were wild, into a higher level as man's garden. The higher state of the ecological processes represented by that garden could not have developed without man and cannot maintain themselves without appropriate human activity. Imagine your average Earth-firster hearing this stuff. They'd want a nuclear rouge. Remove the gardener or reduces gardening activities to a level below that required, and the required is the level that a certain population density requires, a certain soil and energy environments that have to keep functioning. Reduce it below that level and the garden will deteriorate. To remove man or reduce his role is to deprive the biosphere of the key species on which the balance of ecology depends. The problem is not maintaining the garden in some fixed present state. The present ecology, like zero growth and sustainable development, those terms that became popular in the 80s and 90s are not indicative, from Luther's point of view, of real ecological balance. They emphasize static balance. Mm-hmm. And since you get more and more people, you need to have more and more better technology and smarter people able to understand them and create more and to maintain them. Mm-hmm. The problem is not maintaining the garden in some fixed present state. The present ecology as a whole is subject to the same essential principle as the first phases of the development of the biosphere. So he's saying once we understand first nature more and more, we're going to see these same principles that we're now implementing if we were under LaRouche's program. The free energy characteristic of living forms. Now, that's interesting. You know, I say first nature is immortal, you know, my own little agenda. He's saying that. He's saying that free energy is a characteristic of first nature, of living forms. That's the original principles in nature. So the present ecology as a whole is subject to the same essential principle as the first phases of the development of the biosphere. The free energy characteristic of living forms demands that the process of further development must continue or the ecology must turn into an auto-cannibalistic phase. Since the only means by which the ecology generally is able to effect the necessary progress is its human agency, a reduction in the negatropic activities of mankind, such as putting society into a zero, quote, zero state of negative auto-cannibalistic reproduction, must result in a corresponding onset of auto-cannibalistic processes in the biosphere generally. Now, he's going to talk about fascist economic models, fascist economy under Elmar Schacht and Hitler that led to the concentration camps. That's an example of primitive accumulation and entropic forms of ecology. Is the noise in the background okay? It's coming through clear?
Sure.
Okay. The general way in which ecological auto-cannibalism occurs is well known. Now, he's talking about having proper organization of the Federal Reserve and central banking is part of the ecological process, right?
Mm.
Look at the cartoon images in the media, you know, the guy out in nature versus some corporate Alan Greenspan, and they're seen as antagonistic, yin and yangs, pairwise, P-A-I-R-wise, you know, like an electron or proton. That is an immature, infantile view of the ecology. Neither image is appropriate to the environmental interactions that LaRouche is talking about. So he says, the general way in which ecological auto-cannibalism occurs is well known. It is broadly analogistic to the heuristic outline we gave for economic auto-cannibalism. That would be the fascist economy of Hitler and Helmut Schacht. The weakening of the conditions for the maintaining of higher forms of life in the ecology shifts the ecological values to emphasize the proliferation of relatively primitive forms, which, okay, he's describing the auto-cannibalism. The weakening of the conditions for the maintaining of higher forms of life in the ecology shifts the ecological values to emphasize the proliferation of relatively primitive forms, which mediate the obliteration of the thermodynamically doomed higher species. The actions of insects, fungi, bacteria, and viruses as lower forms performing this mediating entropic function, that means negative function, of auto-cannibalism are generally known. The elaboration of that here would be more entertaining than essential. The essential point is that for thermodynamic auto-cannibalism, the process of decay is not a matter of the appearance of just one mode of auto-cannibalism. So it's not just one kind. It's an ecology of an entropic ecology of auto-cannibalism. The action of the initial mode is to reduce the thermodynamic value of the ecology as a whole, lowering the temperature, in quotes, and shifting the mode to a lower, less efficient form of auto-destruction, and then to another level, lower level. Like the economic model for a fascist economy, the process of ecological auto-cannibalism is a chain reaction. Now, the normal eco-fascist, as LaRouche calls them, or the normal middle-class idea of an ecologist or a fringe version, Earth-firster version of ecologist, would, reading this, think that LaRouche was fascist by imposing the nuclear power plants, right?
Mm-hmm.
So humans are inside the dream of cognition trying to determine what's real and what isn't, what's thought and what's fascism. So LaRouche is in my book here to counter what William Irwin Thompson will represent. William Thompson being a thinker on conventional allegor kind of ecology, ecological values as presented in his new movie, The Inconvenient Truth, at this point, right? You heard about this documentary?
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to continue. Is there anything you want to say about that quote?
No, I'm okay.
Yeah, like it's obvious what he means, and whether he's right or not is another question, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have more quotes here where he tries to explain and prove that he's right from his point of view. The next quote is, the code is CT. I'll look at the index at the back to see what CT is. This is an article written in January, February 1976 from the Campaigner again, and it's called Physics and Economics. See, this is the multidisciplinary polymath part of LaRouche. I mean, economists don't bring in physics or Beethoven when they're writing about economics, the, quote, dismal science, right?
Mm-hmm.
He brings in all the other specialist parts of Western knowledge. So, this quote begins. You want to read it? Reductionist biology?
Yeah. Reductionist biology.
Oh, I didn't say. This is page 4 in that essay from January, February, 1976.
Mm-hmm. And what's the essay again?
Physics and Economics.
Okay.
Uh-oh, they're starting to play music next door. Hope that doesn't interrupt too much.
Okay.
My voice is pretty strong on this, eh?
Yeah, you're coming through good.
Okay.
I'll let you know if there's a problem. Reductionist biology locates the evolution of the species in the isolated biological individual, a hotly defended opinion in defiance of the relevant empirical evidence.
Yeah, he's putting down reductionist biology.
An array of species, to put the point in broad terms, corresponds to a negentropic state of an entire ecology. The effect of shifts in populations of included varieties is to alter the negentropic state for better or for worse. The analogy to variations in specific commodities is slightly strained, but not otherwise inappropriate. An adverse result lowers the negentropic state with corresponding effects on the plenum of species. Negentropy mediates further variations, which mediate further variations. Thus, the universal, the entire biosphere, or specific ecology, mediates its own
negentropy
through the determination of the individual variety. In economy, the determinant of negentropy is immediately located in the single creative individual. This individual is variously creative, either in synthesizing new conceptions whose realizations increase the negentropy of the economy as a whole, or, quote-unquote, more passively, develops conceptions which enable him to master the conceptual innovations created by others. The material-cultural conditions of life determine the kinds of creativity of this import available to the society. In this way, realized inventions, by enhancing the negentropy of general material-cultural existence, foster the advancement of the creative powers of the population, which has been a potential for new inventions which are realized as further advances in the material cultural negentropy of the society as a whole.
So this quote, this section is, we've established by the previous quote his idea of ecology and how you have to get a lot of people thinking and adding to the technological situation. This quote spells out that value in particular, that you need to have the population smart enough to create new inventions that keep the high level of negentropy going and doesn't fall back into entropy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the particular explanation of that. Now, it's good, Scott, I force you to, or we volunteered this situation, I don't know how it began, but you reading these quotes, and you have to stumble through, and that allows me to say it smoother when I redo it. But I hope it doesn't bother. I think it's okay that you're stumbling, because there's a lot to be said, and by you going along slower, it allows a person to hear it, maybe.
Yeah, I imagine it'll irritate some people,
yeah.
And other people will be okay with it.
Yeah, because I read too fast, but mine comes in after we've worked out the details. And your slow reading, I mean, this is hard stuff to focus on to while if you're just listening.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind that you're stumbling, because that keeps it slower. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay, so is there anything you want to say about this? Does this make sense? Or do I have to read it again and go into it?
Yeah,
I'm going to read it again.
Let's go into it.
What do you think? Did you get the basic broad view he's saying? You got to have smart individuals to keep the negentropy going, right?
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, we're not, it's sad but true. We're not, I don't know if we're creating those people in this planet right now.
Well, LaRouche says we're not, and we're in big trouble, he says.
I mean, we're creating all kinds of very sharp, creative, intelligent human beings, but they're all of the sort of fragmented, you know,
yes.
not comprehensive like LaRouche. Like you say, the guy who writes the, you know, in incredible mathematical, theoretical physics paper, but doesn't have any applications for it, so he passes it on to somebody else who then, you know, puts it to work for the military-industrial complex, but not for the evolution of the biosphere as a whole.
Right. The the reductionist biology concept is interesting. He critiques that. So what we have today is, in my model, you got kids who are pretty good with their TV body and chip body, but their chemical bodies are not being fed properly, not taught to think properly in that endeavor, and they are made quite unhealthy by what they eat. So the modern citizen is sophisticated in North America in handling these four bodies, right?
Well, let me ask you something, because...
Not handling all four, but is sophisticated in handling the newer bodies. Okay, what were we going to say?
Well, an individual can take matters into his own hands in terms of his critical thinking, his education, researching, developing the chemical body. But you can't do much with your TV body. The TV body's there. You have to sort of live with it, like it's the furniture. It's the furniture that's installed. It's bolted to the floor, and there's not much you can do to change it or create an ecology with that. I mean, you're sort of responsible for your chemical body, its emotions, actions, and thoughts in LaRouche context. But what can you do about your you know, about the chip body or the TV body?
Well, you do. You interact with this ecology by consuming it, and so much of the economy is based on activities. For example, the Iraq war has more people covering it and making livings out of than the people fighting in it. So it's a huge economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that affects you and how it provides jobs for you or takes jobs away. So you're talking about consuming the imagery. There's the producer aspect of the TV and the chip body, and, you know, large parts of the populations are involved in making those things.
But didn't Marshall say that the electronic environment can't be bought, stolen, hijacked, or what have you? I mean, we're sort of, there's not, I mean, we
what he meant by that is that cash does not measure and control the ecology. That's why we had the crash in the 30s, late 20s, early 30s, is the expanded radio ecology could not be measured by the old visual space accounting methods.
Mm-hmm.
Too much wealth. Now, when women went to the workforce in the 60s and 70s under supposedly the liberating dogma or doctrine of feminism and new opportunities for women, McLuhan said no. Any particular ideology had nothing to do with it. He says once we have an electric environment, it puts the whole population to work. The whole population goes to work. And part of that is children going to school and the hyper-education we've had since Sputnik in 1957. And the kids employing people to build the schools and the teachers and all that, economy and ecology. But the whole population goes to work. And there's a lot of work to be done in terms of software inputting and outputting. So women were sucked into the economy, vortexed into it by the expanding... operations that had to be manned.
Mm-hmm.
Had nothing to do with whether if there were just men on the planet, it would just would have been more men working. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They just needed more bodies.
Well, LaRouche can be responsible for his chemical body, can be responsible for the evolution of his thinking, feeling, and actions in the world. How can he be responsible for his TV or chip body? What can he do? I mean, it's part of the environment, and
he ignores it. For example, the chip body economy comes in the late 80s and early 90s. He called it the tax derivatives world. Remember that?
Yeah.
The whole thing that he was against tax derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
And And he had certain policies. I think he wanted to tax that whole economy, the junk bond economy, and then the, whatever you want to call the economy of the 90s, the 24/7 rapid transmission of data, you know, the gambling casino economy, the hyperinflation, yet wealth spread all around for what turned out to be nothing as the Enron happened. That economy, the chip body economy, he had some bureaucratic antidotes to it. So you're asking what he, how was he handling it? He thought he could do that, but I don't. He just keeps applying the same thing, that we have to take the central banking and collapse the Federal Reserve and not have the private ownership of the central interest rate mechanism and have the federal government take over that and start issuing credit sensibly and sanely. And I don't know if he could do that inside the chip body economy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying, what were you saying? How's he dealing with the chip economy?
Yeah, well, I guess what I was asking was, I mean, you've answered my question, I guess. I mean, I was feeling a sense of frustration, like, look, here I am, I'm in the middle of this chip body, I'm in the middle of this TV body, what can I do to create an ecology? I mean, rather than asking what can I do, I said, well, what can LaRouche do?
Right.
And so you mentioned some policies that could be put into place. LaRouche sees the way in which ecological measures could be brought to the chip body or to the TV body, but the fact is nobody can implement anything.
That's right, and that's why we're in the age of chaos, and national economies are basket cases, and everybody is actually on a level of primitive accumulation. It's not simple running around ripping off each other's food, is that the complexity of the primitive accumulation is inside what McLuhan would call these TV and chip landscapes, which require millions of people to be pacified or to be allowed to live and fed so that they can be the audiences for the Nielsen ratings and for advertising, you see? Way more complex than any economist is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes every citizen an expendable quark. These are my views, and you just need new people to replace the other people. As long as you got a batch of people coming in, that's all it is. But there's no private identity for your chemical body in the way that LaRouche wants the chemical body to have a holistic identity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are providing here in my book the LaRouche program for the chemical body and how one would think clearly if you could control the other bodies and focus on the chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
So, recognizing those limitations, perhaps, maybe not, LaRouche took over, maybe he could alter it, and McLuhan is exaggerating these TV and chip body landscapes. Okay, because some people think if you just give them better, it's called the rationalist view, if you give people the facts and the proper environment, they'll think smarter. It's just natural.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this new guy, George Lakoff, who's an advisor to the Democratic Party, teacher at Berkeley, talks about the role of metaphor. I remember Jerry Fialka used to be part of a George Lakoff. Maybe you went to it. Remember at the bookstore there in Santa Monica? He would go and attend these circles with these people?
Yeah, I used to attend Jerry's meetings. I don't know if I did the George Lakoff one.
Yeah. These weren't run by Jerry. They were run by other people, but Jerry would attend them at the Midnight Special bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Midnight Special, was that the name of that bookstore in Santa Monica?
Mm-hmm. What? Yes, they've closed down since then, I believe.
Right. So anyways, George Lakoff, he says that the rationalist view doesn't understand the metaphorical nature of thinking and logic and what he calls framing, and people, the idea that Al Gore has and represents the rationalist view. You just put out the right information, people will understand, and then do the correct thing. He says communication, Lakoff says communication is more complex than that. He's actually a simple, watered-down version of McLuhan's figure ground analysis. But LaRouche may be accused of being a rationalist thinker. But we'll see. Let's see. I'm going to read the quote again, and we're going to look into some details of it. Reductionist biology Now, that's interesting. That's like the chemical body. Reductionist biology created the chemical body from the point of view of the TV body landscapes and the disc kind of bodies McLuhan talks about. The two arms, two legs body is not all that we're made up of. So chemical biology reduces our notion of what we're made up of. So, but LaRouche is putting down reductionist biology, too. Reductionist biology, and this is on page 16 of my book, and the quote goes over into page 18. Page 17 having McLuhan quotes. So on page 16 of my book, reductionist biology locates the evolution of the species in the isolated biological individual, a hotly defended opinion in defiance of the relevant empirical evidence. So he is not just, he's not limiting his idea that the, he doesn't believe that we're an isolated biological individual. That's like the Gutenbergian view, you know, visual space view that McLuhan would use of the private, literate individual. LaRouche is seen as someone hoiking up the sovereignty of the individual and his ability to become a genius, but he doesn't put it in traditional conservative or whatever you call the industrial metaphor that thinks of isolated biological individuals. He says that's not relevant empirically. He says, an array of species, to put the point in broad terms, corresponds to a negentropic state of an entire ecology. So he's trying to be holistic here. The effect of shifts in populations of included varieties is to alter the negentropic state for better or worse. So back to the same point. The shifting of the ground of the ecology leads to negentropy or entropy. The analogy to variations in specific commodities is slightly strained but not otherwise inappropriate. An adverse result lowers the negentropic state with corresponding effects on the plenum of species. And now that's how nature would be affected. An enhanced negentropy mediates further variations, which mediate further variation. Thus, the universal, the entire biosphere or specific ecology, mediates its own negentropy through the determination of the individual variety. So I think what he's saying is that the isolated biological individual, seen as not part of a ground and a larger ecology of negentropic or entropic states, is the problem with reductionist biology. They don't see a figure ground situation. So here's LaRouche, similar to McLuhan, applying a figure ground, and that the individual has to be located into an ecology, a second nature ecology. Now, continuing his quote, in economy, the determinant of negentropy is immediately located in the single creative individual. So now we're getting to not the reductionist biological model, but the creative individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Posing these words to mean something different, a figure-ground relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
This individual is variously creative either in synthesizing new conceptions, there's a dialectic position, new thinking, new thoughts, synthesizing new conceptions, that's what creativity is, whose realization increases, if we materialize them, whose realization increases in the negentropy of the economy as a whole. Or the citizen, the individual, more passively, in quotes, more passively develops conceptions which enable him to master the conceptual innovations created by others. So you're either creating new stuff or learning about what other people created and allowed to be given an opportunity to master these other conceptions. The material-cultural conditions of life determine the kinds of creativity of this import. I'll read that again. The material-cultural conditions of life determine the kinds of creativity of this import available to the society. In other words, you've got to have a high negentropic ecology to make creative individuals who will keep that ecology going because they'll be able to contribute to it and understand it. In this way, realized inventions, by enhancing the negentropy of general material cultural existence, foster the advancement of the creative powers of the population, which is then a potential for new inventions, which are realized as further advances in the material cultural negentropy of the society as a whole, which is then a potential for new inventions, which are realized as further advances in the material cultural negentropy of the society as a whole. So it's a self-fulfilling process here. It's a social reproductive process.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are eventually going to have to come to where we read about McLuhan's method of how to create these negentropic enhancement individuals, right?
Sure. I imagine it's through some educational process.
Right, right. And just to quickly say, what it is, his main education process is that people go back and review and redo the experiments and thought establish successful thought patterns that previous geniuses laid out, usually individual thinkers.
Yeah.
And by redoing them.
Yeah.
He's not for people just learning facts. People have to replay the basic experiments that history has done that led to the wonderful place we're living in today. So we have spent the last few pages. We go back to, we've done, well, this is great, Scott. We've done page 12, 14, 16, and half of 17. Basically, LaRouche arguing against the new cliches that were servicing in the media as how one should recycle, save the ecology, save the environment, save the whales. He's countering all that kind of thinking with what he would call a more practical, creative way of dealing with the ecology problems, right?
Right.
And before that, we had a few things on the immature, a few paragraphs on the immature individual in relation to love.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, some basic principles about science and art.
Right.
So let's go on to the next. Anything you want to say about that?
Just two things. One is that this process of education, like you say, he's not just talking about, not just talking about remembering facts, but like you say, going back to the original thinkers, but also not just the individual thinkers in any particular field, not just like going back and studying, say, Kepler per se, because he's talking about the reformation of the human psyche, or not the reformation, but the maturation of the human being, which is multidisciplinary. I mean, he's ranging from reforms in psychoanalysis to reforms in scientific thinking to reforms in economic thinking
and in culture and art.
In culture and art.
It's very ambitious.
Too bad he wasn't able to found, a university or an educational system where students could actually come and study. But he's got so much writing against him in terms of forces that do not want to see him succeed.
And he may be wrong. His whole worldview may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what my book is designed for, juxtaposition of these different interesting, qualified, pretty energetic thinkers.
Well, see, now I'm gradually becoming convinced that he's right, because he's a coherent thinker, and what he's saying is making more and more sense to me. And what context would you say that he might be wrong?
One of the things is that he doesn't see the media effects that frustrate his situation, and which McLuhan lays out. That's why we have LaRouche opposite McLuhan here, because that's a very basic argument here, that they both are pretty insightful in how they see what the issues are, and yet they are pretty opposite. I mean, basically, McLuhan is an Aristotelian, and LaRouche is Platonic, and that's a historical debate. And McLuhan even includes the sophistry of the rhetoricians, which is neither Aristotelian nor Platonic, on his side. And others would say that, Plato's and Aristotle are on the same side. But we've got some basic divisions here acted out by these two guys on what human thinks is valuable and what is important and how to do things. It's like Lenin's, what is to be done? Because LaRouche is he's talking about we've created a lot of good technology at this point in the 20th century, when he's writing this in the early 70s. But he will say that everybody's being taught wrong, governed wrong, and everything is completely upside down, and you've got to have to turn it all upside, reestablish, right side up, and, bureaucratically reform the content if we're going to survive. But we're in an electronic environment, a fragmented, decentralized environment, where no one could get into that particular position.
Mm-hmm.
One individual. So he's relegated to being a cult. But so is the neoconservative cabal supposedly around Bush today. That could be called a cult. It's one cult fighting another cult to get into a position of managing the content of media, and that behavior will look cult-like, mm-hmm. regardless of who's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because people feel imposed upon by any political government structure because it's so puny. It's a chemical body operation, so puny compared to the chip body and TV bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, when you read LaRouche, he is making sense within conventional parameters. He's got it down, and he's actually a healthy revolution within that kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He gets you thinking balanced.
Yeah.
If you don't accept the McLuhan intervention, right? The McLuhan intervention.
Right.
Stressing other factors.
Right.
So we read that, and so here we are. He's now going to use some economic terms. We're now going to do LaRouche's formula, which is, and this will be the quote just before we get into him discussing how to educate people.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And the actual Platonic Socratic program he brings in, which is on page 20, but on page 18, is his economic formula, which is S with a little mark by the S.
Mm-hmm.
S/(), and then in brackets C plus V. And V equals variable capital, C equals constant capital, and as he say here, S I think is surplus. But just in this particular quote, it doesn't define S.
Yeah, S or social surplus.
Where do you see that?
Right above the equation.
Oh, yeah. It's not in brackets, right. And I see. The others are in brackets with equal signs, right. Yeah, social surplus. Okay. That's why I guess S prime means two S's, right? Yeah.
I'm not sure.
That's why S accent. Okay. A little marker.
I notice I'm looking at the words energy equivalence within this paragraph, and the one thing that I just wanted to mention from what we read previously is this interesting statement that the action of the initial mode is to reduce the thermodynamic value of the ecology as a whole, lowering the quote-unquote temperature and shifting the mode to a lower, less efficient form of auto-destruction and then to another. I find that really interesting how he's, bringing the ecology of economics into physics terms, using
yes.
such terms as thermodynamics and temperature and, getting it down to, like, calories of energy burning, almost like an organic machine or something that's going, needs to go on a diet or something. I mean, I just like the way he talks about that.
Yeah, I was looking for where you're reading that. That's from, that's the previous quote.
Yeah, that's the last quote from...
Last paragraph. The action of the initial mode is to reduce the thermodynamic value of the ecology as a whole, lowering the temperature in quotes, and shifting the mode to a lower, less efficient form of auto-destruction and then to another, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like an immediate ecology thing.
Yeah, I mean, that, brings in, he's a physicist, he's an economist, he's, he's talking in terms of,
He's a psychologist, he's an artist, he's a sociologist.
Yeah.
And he's a musician, and he's a poet.
Yeah.
And it's like all these disciplines are collaged in Finnegan's Wake. He actually is HCE of Finnegan's Wake, laying it back into English and putting it in order.
Oh, yeah.
And keeping it a seamless web. And that's where he's a modern polymath. All the separate categories he integrates, like McLuhan does.
Yeah. But just this phrase, the thermodynamic value of ecology as a whole, thinking in terms of... in energetic terms like that, which is, when he's, it's part of this theme of negentropy, being able to work more efficiently, using energy more efficiently with less waste, I guess, or less friction would be, about thermodynamics and temperature, we're talking about friction. He's talking about moving towards a frictionless
economy. That's why I say What was the last words?
Frictionless economy.
Yeah, that's why his conception, he conceptualizes the cold fusion environment. He's the one who does it. His thinking led him to understanding that. Because
mm-hmm.
he implements it already before cold fusion shows up. And yeah, the reductionist biology quote is from something called Physics and Economics. There's your Physics and Economics in the title of that essay.
Mm-hmm.
So
does he still stand behind Pons and Fleischmann? Or did he ever? I mean, he might have had a different concept of free energy or fusion. He was thinking of fusion energy. I don't know if he ever, did he ever believe in Pons and Fleischmann's idea of cold fusion?
I end the LaRouche section on page 80 with him discussing Pons and Fleischmann and how historically important their invention was. That's
okay.
The second last quote in the LaRouche section on page 80.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You want me to go read it?